Blog Talk Radio.
You can't do that. What are you thinking? You are not good enough. You are not going to get that job. You don't have an education. What? That is for smart people, not you. That outfit doesn't look good on you. You look ridiculous. You want to go where? With what? Money you don't have? Remember, you're broke and worthless. Nobody loves you. This is the voice of the toxic ego, the voice that is holding you back from your divine life. Dr. Nydia is here to guide you in learning to let go of this voice. She is here to teach you inner work, a journey through the soul, to empower you in creating a passageway to spiritual development. Dr. Nydia received her PhD from Union Institute and University in Psychology with emphasis in addiction studies. She is a registered clinical social worker intern and received her master's degree from Barry University. She is a certified addiction professional for the state of Florida. She is also a Reiki master, healing touch practitioner, and a master hypnotherapist. For more information, visit her website at www.dranidia.com. Dr. Nydia. Now, please welcome your host of Inner Work, Dr. Nydia.
And hello, this is Dr. Nydia.
And this is Alma. How are you today?
Good. Hoping that hope, it's already dropped like 5 times and the show hasn't even started. Yes, okay, so what's today's topic, Alma?
The purpose of, the purpose of life or your mission?
Your mission. What is your mission? What is your purpose on life? Why are we here? Mm-hmm. So, why are we here?
To serve, I think, other people.
Okay. What does that mean?
That we are here to help other people, to get better lives.
You know why I love Alma so much? Because I can really mess with her. Because her English is not all that good. She knows what she's trying to say, and in Spanish it wouldn't be a problem. But in English, I'm not so bad. Okay, here's the thing. We're here to enhance humanity.
Enhance.
That's a new word for you, right?
I know the word, but I never heard it.
And in Spanish, you know it.
Yeah.
The thing is that, think about it. Why are you here? Why are you on this planet? Have you ever asked yourself that question? So, you know, so now what? Now I'm here. I went to school. I got married. I had all my kids. I went through all these things in life. And life is the university. It is called the university of life. And in life, we learn how to help.
Yeah.
Right?
I ask these questions to myself when I started to think for 2 years. So, if I don't think,
if you don't say thing,
I thought, what am I doing here?
Exactly.
Because I lost the meaning of life, my life.
Because your mission is to sing.
Yes. Entertain people.
To entertain. Yes. Well, the hope is not just for you to sing in the shower. It's for you to sing, period. And let everybody hear, because music has that vibration of peace and serenity, no matter what the music is, even that horrible, loud, you know, very noisy music that makes no sense to me, but it makes sense to other people. And so whatever the kind of music that I listen to probably doesn't make sense to other people either. Okay, so, you know, it's a give and take. We all have our level as to where we are in life. And this is very important. Because look at the way evolution works, where your mother has sex with your father,
mm-hmm.
and a little creature begins to grow inside of her, right? It has no knowledge of anything that we know of,
mm-hmm.
okay? It has no, you know, can't walk on its own, it can't talk on its own, it can't do anything really except to grow. It knows enough to suck on whatever it is that it needs to suck so that it can get its nourishment or that umbilical cord that nurtures and gives the baby its nutrition and all of that stuff. But I've seen sonograms with babies with their fingers in their mouth.
Yeah.
So they know enough to suck their mouth and their thumb. You know, so, but still, you know, there's not really a lot that the baby can do because it's trapped in this, in the body. And then this little creature comes out of the body, and it's so cute and adorable, but it's half blind, it can't hear very well, it can't talk at all. It can communicate, which is different, but it can't talk. And so, and then as the child evolves, as the baby evolves, it begins to grow and learn things. And they learn basic stuff in the beginning, but, you know, you learn the most within the first 6 years of your life. Then you pretty much learn the rest of the time. And because you learn how to talk, you learn a language,
yeah.
believe it or not. You learn to recognize people. You learn to know the difference between your caretakers and those who are not your caretakers. You know enough to communicate when you're hungry or when you're cold or when you're wet. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we learn within the first 6 years of our life. And so what happens is that we continue to evolve. And so you don't know when you're a year old how to read and write. That you begin to learn in the first grade. And so look at the evolution of our lives. And we've gotten to the point where we are because we learn. We're constantly, constantly learning. And we learn basic stuff like reading and writing and talking and communicating and, you know, the we in the United States speak English for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
That's our language. But we don't speak Russian. We weren't taught that. So there are things that we were taught, and there are things that we learned through instinct. I was with my grandson the other day, and he's 14 years old. Level of learning. In other words, he should have already had learned what I taught him maybe a year or two before.
Mm-hmm.
See? So when I taught it to him, he got it immediately. I mean, there was no doubt about it. It was like, oh, I got it.
Hmm.
See, he was more than ready to learn that. And it doesn't matter what it is. We don't always learn things when we're ready to learn them because there's nobody around to teach us that.
Mm-hmm.
See, so that when we do learn it, we're quick learners. And then there are other things that, I mean, he's 14 years old. If I tried to take him to a place where he could learn how to drive a Mack truck, he probably would have a really hard time. I mean, even regular driving would be difficult for him. But it'll be easier than learning how to do a Mack truck because he's not mature. His body's not mature enough. His brain's not mature enough to learn that type of difficulty. But when he's ready, it'll just come naturally. It'll be, oh, okay, then I do this and I do that. See? And so this is how we learn. Life is the university.
And let me make a parenthesis here.
Yeah.
You know, I sometimes hear Latin people saying, I don't want my child to speak Spanish, only English, because she lives here and this is what she or he should do.
Uh-huh.
And I think, oh my God, it's so easy for a child to learn a language.
Why would you deny them that?
Yeah. You know, if you have a couple where one is Japanese, the other is Spanish,
uh-huh.
and they live in Toronto, they need to speak English. So the kid can learn three languages at the same time. It's not a problem for him.
Mm-hmm.
Why does he have to cut this possibility?
Exactly. You're denying them maybe 20 years down the road from being able to use that language.
Yeah.
See, my kids, well, I taught my kids Spanish because we spoke Spanish in my house. My parents spoke Spanish in the house, and I did too. But one of my sons refused to speak Spanish. He refused. And we were in New York where everybody speaks English. But then we came here to Miami where nobody speaks English. This is like little Cuba. And so he had a hard time. Well, my other kids, no problem. But him, he had a hard time. And he would fight with the Cubans. You're the United States of English, you know, that kind of stuff. And I would tell him, why are you making it so difficult for yourself? Because he was the one that was making it difficult. It's not that he didn't know how to speak Spanish, because he had heard it, but he refused to speak it. See? And then life for him was very, very difficult. And then he married an Italian woman, so he refused, and he never taught his son how to speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, when my son passed away, she remarried a Mexican who didn't speak any English. And so my grandson learned how to speak Spanish because this man didn't know how to speak English. See? But it was very difficult. And I would tell him, I said, I don't understand why you don't want to be bilingual. Because we're in the United States and blah, blah, blah.
So God, this is good for you.
Exactly. Anyway. The whole thing is that we have a mission. Whatever that mission is, we have to find it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you have a mission. I used to think that because I talk too much, that was a defect. Because everybody told me, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about. And maybe when I was 10 years old, I didn't know what I was talking about. But I talked and I talked and I talked, and my mother would say, oh my God, I'm dizzy from hearing you talk. And so I thought that it was a bad thing because everybody would tell me to be quiet. But when I was looking for my mission, and I would be embarrassed sometimes where I would say to myself,
perdido tiempo sin recuperarme y oportunidades para amar de nuevo, y a mi corazón lo recogí en pedazos, mereció la pena vivir de aprendiz, pero viví.
Disconnecting every few minutes. Okay, so what was I saying?
The mission.
The mission.
That you were, everybody thought.
And so when I was looking for my mission, I discovered that what I thought was my defect turned out to be my mission.
because that's what I do. And with, you know, there are certain questions that you have to ask when you mission, and when you find it, it's that part of you that's passionate that you just can't not do. Like with me and the talking, I had to talk. It was just like I had to talk, and I was a good storyteller, and I was, and once I discovered that that's my mission, I discovered three things. I wanted to help humanity. I wanted to make people laugh, and I wanted to be a public speaker. And that's exactly what I'm doing. And I don't know how I make people laugh, but I know people laugh. Somebody told me the other day, I said something, I don't remember. I said something to you the other day that you and Betty almost fell on the floor laughing. Do you remember what it was that I gave? You said, oh, look at the look on your face. Because I said, I remember what it was. Do you remember what it was?
No.
I had those three things, and it was interesting how, oh yeah, we were talking about how I said something to you the other day,
yeah,
where I was telling you about putting yourself first. You know, when you put yourself first, it's like on the airplane when the stewardess says to you, when the oxygen mask comes down, put it on yourself first. Because if not, you can't help anybody else. And if you're traveling with a child and you try to put it on the child, you may miss the child's mouth. And besides, who's going to hold it up there if you don't finish putting it on? You have seconds before you pass out. So you have to put it on yourself first and then put it on your child or whoever else you need to help. And it's the same thing with life. You have to look out for yourself first. There is no doubt, because without you, you can't help anybody. You can't do anything for anybody else. And and I have some macho men that I talk to in my group, and they say, no, I got to take care of my family first. No, but you have to make sure that you're okay first, because if you're not okay, then your family is going to be taking care of you.
Mm-hmm.
See? So the questions, we have some questions here. And listen to them, write them down, and ask them to ask yourself these questions. If you don't have an answer within the first 60 seconds of asking the question, then just move on to the next question. So the first question is, what made you happiest as a child? What made you happiest as a child? So when you were a child, looking back, what made you happy? What made you smile? What made you go to bed feeling good? And ask yourself and write down within a minute, just write the answer down. What made you happiest as a child? And there are some of us that really don't have very happy memories of our child. That even in the insanity that I lived in with my father beating me,
perdido tiempo sin recuperarme y oportunidades para amar de nuevo, y a mi corazón lo recogí en pedazos.
Hello, so we're back. Okay, so I had this aunt that would come and get me, and she'd take me to go get ice cream, and you know, whatever I was going through at the moment, it she was the one that made me feel really good, because she was there for me. She was there for me, and she took care of me. And so what is that memory that you have? Even if it's just one memory, try and go back and find it. And the next question is, what activities or people make you smile today? What activities or what people make you smile today?
I think that smile, laugh, it's a very good thing in your life.
It's a wonderful medicine.
You know, when I, now that I am older and I have some experience, when I choose a partner in my life, one of the big important things that I look in this person is if it's a person that has sense of humor. For me, it's very important.
Very important.
Because to face life, you have to have sense of humor. It's sometimes it gets so ridiculous, complicated, that you need to laugh. You need to laugh of yourself.
And the more you laugh at yourself, the better it is. Now, here I am. I speak English and Spanish. Writing Spanish, not so much. And so I write a lot on the blackboard, and I do a Spanish group. And I truly don't know how to spell a lot of words, because in Spanish, the S and the C are kind of interchangeable, and I don't know when to put the S and when to put the C. They sound the same.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, I might put down the S, and everybody tells me, no, it's a C. And I encourage that, and I ask them when I write something on the board, I ask them, is this correct? And often they'll say no, and I hear them giggling behind me, and I know that I'm writing it wrong. So I encourage them to giggle and let me know when it's not right, when you know, when I'm misspelling words, and I do it all the time. And sometimes I even do it on purpose. Like, for instance, when there's a Z or when there's an S, I'll put it a Z instead of an S, and they'll all start laughing, and then they want to help me.
Yes.
And then some of them will give me a grammar lesson, so a spelling lesson, a whole, you know, the E before I and all that stuff. And so they'll tell me that some the words that have a Z, the words that have a C, the words that have an S. And so we have a couple of minutes of laughing there at my expense, but I don't mind.
Yeah.
See? Because then they know that it's okay to make a mistake, because that's what I'm teaching. It's okay to make a mistake. Don't worry about it. Laugh at yourself and say, okay, my bad. Next. See? Instead of getting hysterical because we're not perfect. Because trust me, we're not. Okay, so what activities or people make you smile? And write that down within 60 seconds. If you haven't done it within 60 seconds, move on. So the next question is, what do you do that makes you lose track of time? What do you do that you're so immersed in it that makes you lose track of time? What do you do that makes you lose track of time. Have you ever been so engrossed in a book,
yes,
or somebody speaking or a game or something where you don't even realize that there are people around you? And there could be a lot of noise and they're talking and laughing and everything, and you don't hear them because you're so caught up in what you're looking at or what you're doing. You see it all the time. Look at these people in New York that were on the subway. They were so engrossed in their iPhone or in their telephones that they didn't see this man come up to them with a gun, and he shot somebody. And I bet you anything, the guy never saw it coming. See? And it wasn't until he shot somebody and somebody looked up that they realized there's a man with a gun here and he's shooting people.
But, you know, it's incredible how the phones, especially the phones, because everybody has a phone today.
Everybody has a phone.
Yeah. And it's incredible how people cannot separate their life from their phones for a moment.
For a moment.
I play every Saturday and Fridays in a place.
In a club.
In a club. And I see in the tables people that are with friends celebrating a birthday, something like that, and they are not paying attention on everything. Not the music, not their friends, not the food, not the drink. It's
nothing.
The phone. And you think, oh my God, tomorrow they are not going to remember to know what happened here.
Well, you know,
they are missing part of their life.
My son is in his room and I am in my room. And when I want to talk to him, I go to his room and I knock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
But when he wants to talk to me, he texts me. And he's in the room right next to you. He may be in the kitchen. He'll text me. And I tell him, come into my room. And I won't answer it. Half the time, I don't answer it because he's right there. But he's one of those that's on his phone all the time.
Yeah.
What do you do that makes you lose track of time?
And when I talked about the phone, it's not exactly what the question is talking about. The question is, what do you do that is so, ¿cómo se dice? Que te causa tanto placer.
Pleasurable.
For you, that you lose track of time.
Right. Yes, it's not, and of course, it's what, in other words, when you're excited about something, you really get caught up in it. So what is that you do, that you get so caught up in it that you don't, you know, I wrote my first book, which I haven't published, but that's the first book that I wrote, the big one, the one you I showed you. I still have the manuscript. I wrote the first part of that book walking, sitting down, laying down. And I did it in one day.
Oh, my God.
I did it in one day. I did the outline first, and then underneath the outline, I wrote everything. I mean, you know, then it had to be edited and expanded a little bit. But for the most part, everything that had to be in the book, I did it in one day. And I couldn't not do it. It's just like I was walking and I was writing. I was sitting down watching some, and I was writing because I was in school at the time. And I walked from class to class. And during the class, while I was in the class supposedly listening to the lecture, I was writing. I didn't hear anything that was going on around me. Is that amazing?
Yeah.
Afterwards, when I sat down with all of that information, then I started plugging in a lot of other information. But for the most part, the book was done. So, what do you do that makes you lose track of time? In 60 seconds or less. So now, the next question. What are your greatest natural talents? And if you think the way I did, that talking was a defect of mine, it turned out to be a talent.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. When I discovered that, I said, in order to be a public speaker, I have to be able to speak. Yay, I know how to speak. See? And so it's to find the natural talent. Find what you think that could be your defect. When people say, what's wrong with you? That could be your mission. That could be your talent, your the part of you that is going to resolve for you what you're going to do and be and find and be part of your mission. So what are your greatest natural talents? The next question is, what are the best ways you can use your talents and your passions to do the greatest good for humanity? What are the best ways you can use your talents and your passions to do the greatest good for humanity? So how can you use that talent? What do you, your talent, whatever you feel passionate about, that could be your mission.
And I always want to put a specific thing here is when we talk about humanity, it doesn't mean you're going to change the whole world.
Oh, yeah, that's very important.
Humanity is one person, two, three, four. You have to start with one.
Well, here's the thing. Look around your life. You know at least 35 people. Whether you know them close up and personal, or that it's just somebody in the store where you go, you got coffee, you know them every morning. It could be anybody. It could be your neighbor. It could be your family members. But you know at least 35 people. At least 35 people come into your life on a regular basis that would be affected by you if anything happened to you. And the same way you know at least 35 people, those 35 people know 35 people.
Mm-hmm.
See? So when you talk about humanity, all you need is one person. To see the movie Pay It Forward? He only helped one person, and that one person helped one other person, and that other person helped another person. And before you know it, it was a planetary thing. All you have to know is one person. And that one person will tell one person. But not just one person. That person will tell at least 35 people.
Mm-hmm.
Because we touch at least 30, 35 people in our lives. Now, what happens when you're angry? You go to the store and the salesperson gives you a hard time and you come home and you're raging and you're angry. And who do you take it on?
Your family.
You take it out on your family, even if you don't say anything to them. You walk into the house and you slam a door and you go upstairs and you don't talk to anybody. You think people around you don't notice that?
Mm-hmm.
See? Or if you walk in the house and you bring flowers and you kiss your wife or your significant other or your children or you're smiling or you're whistling or, well, I walk down the street and a lot of people start smiling at me. And it's not because they're smiling at me. It's because I'm smiling at them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they look at me, I'm smiling, and they think I'm smiling at them. See? So how many of those people now, because they got that smile the first thing in the morning or whenever, now how many of them aren't going to start smiling? Somebody else is going to start smiling at them. You know, it's a chain. It's the same way you can get angry at somebody and let go of that energy. The same thing happens when you're letting go of the positive energy, the smiling and the whistling and the humming and the, you know.
Yeah, which is important. You don't need to change anybody. You just need to change yourself.
Self. It's what you do. You know, people respond to whatever it is that you do. And if you're walking around having an attitude, we know that a person like that, one of the valet guys downstairs.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He brought my car the other day, and he didn't slam the door in to close it. He slammed it to open it, you know, and it bounced back and forth. And then he got out of the car, and he just walked away. And you could see he had a bad attitude. I don't know if he was on the phone with somebody, but he's always like that. He's always fighting with somebody. And I look at him, it doesn't bother me at all. I could care less. But I can see how other people who are more vulnerable and don't understand would be affected by that attitude.
Imagine if he find another that is in the same
condition. Yeah, they'll kill each other. But imagine having to live with somebody like that all the time.
Yeah.
I would, if my son is like that, he knows better than to bring that home. My son has that kind of attitude where, you know, I have a parrot, and I know how my son is because my parrot repeats everything my son says. And so one day I was in the kitchen, and I'm washing dishes, and all of a sudden I hear, "Son of a bitch!" And I'm going like, "What?" My son wasn't even there. It was the bird. And the bird is repeating that because he hears it. If the bird hears it often enough, he'll repeat it. See? So it's a matter of, if my son is repeating that so often in the house, what is he doing outside of the house?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't do it to me because he knows that the minute you come and mess with my serenity, you got to go. I can't have that. I will not have that kind of attitude in my house. And so it's funny how he doesn't do it in front of me, and I'm not even aware of it unless my bird said something. It's funny. And I laugh because, you know, it's like, oh, right. What can you do? All right. So wait a minute. Go back to the back.
Okay. Is this one now?
No.
Yeah.
We did this one already?
Yes, and this one is the next.
Okay, so the one we just finished doing is, what are the best ways you can use your talent and your passions to do the greatest good for humanity? Okay, so now, the next one is, when you are 95 years old, what do you most look forward to remembering of your past, of your younger days? When you are 95 years old, what do you most look forward to remembering about your earlier years? When you are 95 years old, what do you most look forward to remembering about your younger years? And this is important. A lot of people say to me, we had a debate the other day, what if I don't get to 95 years old? Well, we know you're not going to get to 95 years old because you already said you're not going to get to 95.
It doesn't matter. That's the only thing that is saying, this question is saying, tomorrow, if it's tomorrow 1 year, it's 10, whatever, it doesn't matter. Today, what are you remembering from your past?
Yeah, but the point is that when you say you're not going to get, what if I don't get to 95 years old? If you have the attitude or you have to ask that question, then for sure you're not going to be 95 ever. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get there because you're already saying you're not going to get there.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't matter what age. Whatever age you look back on your life and you say, you know, what do you look forward to remembering in your earlier years? If you're 30 years old, what do you look forward to remembering when you were 20 or 15?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all look back and say, well, you know, I would have loved to go back to when I got married, or, you know, when my kids were born, or something like that. See? You don't have to live there. And I teach not living in the past. But we can go back and remember and reminisce.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tell you look, go back and look, I'm not telling you to go back and find a tragedy. I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's not important to go back and say, oh, when I was 12, I got raped, or I got molested, or I got whatever. No, we're talking about what are your milestones? when did, you know, what happened when you graduated from high school, if it's a, good thing? Or what happened when you were, when you got married, or when your first child was born, or, you know, that kind of stuff.
But imagine someone is trying to get these memories, and the only thing this person has in his life is, I was,
raped.
So you are, you still living in the past.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm saying. We're not going to the past to remember the tragedies. We're going to the past to remember, even if it was one thing. I remember the best thing that ever happened to me was walking down the aisle when I couldn't even walk across the stage and get my degree for my PhD. I could barely walk at that time. You know, I had some back issues. And I had to be helped across the stage. I mean, it was like I was walking on air. All the pain, all everything that I felt, it was just like they when they said my name, I didn't hear it. I couldn't hear my name being spoken because they were yelling and applauding, and you know, my family was there. Plus, I graduated from the same school that I was a professor, so you know, everybody knew me, and all the students knew me because they were my students. So I didn't even realize I had gotten a standing ovation. Everybody stood up and they're clapping, and then the president, you know, was saying something about, I don't remember what they said. I was like, I did it. Yeah, it was very exciting for me. So what I remember most is that I was very excited. I was very happy. I had accomplished something that I never thought I would accomplish. And nobody in my family would have thought that I would have accomplished. As a matter of fact, they came to my graduation because they wanted to make sure that it was true that I was graduating. Because remember, I'm an alcoholic, and most of my life I spent it lying about everything. And so, you know, they didn't believe me when I said I'm graduating. And so they came, and they were like, yeah, damn, she really is graduating. See, so what is it that you want? What happened in your life that was really an accomplishment for you? See, you had a baby, or that's an accomplishment for some people. Some people, the children have changed their lives forever. You know, I know people that come from the same place where I come from, and when they got clean and sober, when they had their first child, because they knew now they had to take responsibility. Mm-hmm. See, so what is it that you want to remember the most when you're older, when you're 95, when you're 85, when you're whatever, even right now? What is it that you can look back on that you accomplished, that you can say, damn, I did that? See? Mm-hmm. Okay, so the next question, what are the greatest hardships you have overcome? Think about it. We've all had hardships. I was beaten as a child. I mean, my father really wanted to beat me down to where I had, you know, I would become his robot, I guess. You know, like a horse when you break its spirit. My father, boy, he tried. And after him, my first husband, he tried. But look at me. See, what is the greatest hardship that you have overcome? What is the biggest pain that you ever had that you survived? And then you can say to yourself, not only am I a survivor, I'm very creative. Because as difficult as that was, you know, when people give me a hard time now, I tell them, listen, bigger and better than you have tried to break me down. And I'm still here. So knock yourself out. That isn't going to work. And they can't, I don't, nothing really moves me to get angry or get upset, because I've been there. I've done that. You get angry, you get upset, and then you feel better, and then and life goes on.
Yes.
And nothing changes. You know, nobody's going to do anything for you. You have to do it for yourself.
Yes.
When you look at the hardships that you have had, and yes, people have given you a hand, but they've given you a hand because you reached out. Because in your struggle, you said, hey, take my hand, pull me up. And they have. And a lot of people haven't, and you know that. You're surrounded by people who are cutthroats.
Yes.
life is people around us who don't want us to get to move on.
Mm-hmm.
When Alma was making her latest album, nobody encouraged her to do it. I was the only one that said, yeah, go ahead, go do it. And I was really happy for her. But 99% of the other people, no.
Yeah, they saw difficulties and obstacles everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah, and it doesn't matter. You went and you did what you had to do. And so the whole thing is, when you're suffering, you have a hardship, it's like we were saying in the beginning, the life is a university, and you're growing and learning from that university, and hardships are part of it. See? So you make a mistake, people will turn their back on you, people will betray you. That's how they are. You can't wallow and say, oh, I've been betrayed, and repeat it over and over and over again like a hippie says, oh, yeah, he betrayed me.
Okay.
Well, you know what? Get him out of your life, because he's going to continue to betray you,
of course,
because that's the way he or she is. And you have to now move on from that person. You realize that that person is not going to do for you what you want them to do, then that's not the person you want in your life.
I know a guy where his father, it's a manipulator, and he used his son for his purpose. His son has to buy him everything, has to take charge of him.
Mm-hmm.
He's an old man now, but he did it all his life. Now he plays the old man, the poor man, he continues doing that.
Right.
And his son, for time to time, he put him out of his
circle.
Yeah, and he goes well.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good for him. But as soon as the father
comes back
to his life, oh my God, And this is not my problem. I cannot say anything. People are adults, and they should know better than that. But it's a constant. It's a pattern.
But we allow people to do that. When I get people out of my life, they're out. That's it. You're done. I don't need you in my life anymore. And these are the people who think that they can yell at me or they can push me around. I won't allow that. I won't allow myself to be set up to be dishonored. You know what they say? To thine own self be true. So if you can't be true to yourself, other people will not be true to you either. See? And so when you're playing the manipulation game, when you're playing
the
manipulation game, you have to allow other people to manipulate you, because you're trying to manipulate them. You have to stop manipulating, so that you can set limits for other people. I am not going to do it to you, but you're not going to do it to me either. Okay, so the next question is, who are the people to whom you can be the greatest assistance? What's the population of people that are going to be in your life that you're going to assist, that you're going to help? And this is very important, because when you find your mission, you're going to be helping humanity. You're going to be doing stuff for other people. And you may not be doing it one-on-one,
mm-hmm.
even though sometimes you will. But a lot of times you'll be doing it. You know, it's like people who work with or volunteer for for those programs where they help people build houses or paint, or, you know, everybody takes their talent and puts it into this volunteer thing, and they build houses for other people. And they do it just for the sake of themselves. You're showing that's doing something for humanity, because these are people that need help. And they're low-income houses, but they're very good houses. I wish I had one of those. See? So when you're doing something for somebody else, who is that somebody else? Who is your population? Who is the people, the population that you will be helping? For instance, with me, I'm helping people who need to be empowered, who don't know that the power is within themselves. And it's not that other people can't listen to my stuff and improve their lives. Mm-hmm. That's not it. The thing is that what I teach isn't for everybody. You know, there's a lot of people that know this and are practicing it in their lives, and other people that don't know it and are not practicing it and could care less. Mm-hmm. See, but there are people out there that are saying, "Hey, is there anything else? This is it."
Yes.
See, now those people are ready to listen to what I have to say, and so, you know, it's like my grandson. Like I said the other day, I showed him how to do something, and he got it right away. And there are people that are ready to listen to what I have to say and move on to the next level. And this is what's important. We need to find our population. Who is it that you're going to be helping the most? And it's not that other people aren't going to be helped also, but there's a population that will be helped the most. Is it English? I mean, is it children? Is it the elderly? Is it the middle class? Is it the upper class, the lower class? Is it, who is it? Who is that person that you're going to be writing your book about? Who is the person that you're going to be doing your workshops about? Who are going to come to your workshops or read your books or whatever that population is? Very important. Within 60 seconds, 1 minute, write down who those people are going to be. And write down exactly what it is that you want to accomplish. See? If you want to... Outline what it is that you want to do. Let's say you already just figured out, or you already know what your mission is. Write it down like a table of contents. The first thing I'm going to do is A. And then you want to have 1, 2, 3 underneath that A.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, when I found my mission, I want to help humanity. That's A. Now, 1, 2, 3. In the beginning, when I wanted to do it, I said I want to empower women. That's one. Two, I want to empower women who don't know that the power is within themselves. And three, I want to empower women who have daughters who they can set an example for.
Mm-hmm.
See? I have my A and my 1, 2, 3. And then the second one, I think, was the public speaking. So I want to do public speaking. That's B. And then 1, 2, 3, I want to speak to women, right? And tell them my story. And so on. And I went through that whole thing, and I did my outline, and then I just started writing like crazy, and I wrote my first book. See?
Yeah.
And I'm still writing, and I'm still doing, and I'm still editing, but it's already written. It's already there. And I've already written 2 books that are published. But
yes, in the chat, I put the link. One of them is Letting Go of Resistance, The Inner Work Journey.
That's in English.
It's in English. It's on Amazon.com. And the other one is in Spanish, El Poder de Tu Esencia.
The Power of Your Essence. And I'm going to translate it into English, too.
Yeah, Conociendo Tu Yo Interno. And they are both you know, very good tools to enhance your life. I learned the word enhance.
Okay, so
okay, I think the time is over.
Oh my goodness!
So we're gonna put one of the preferred songs of Dr. Nidia. How Can Anyone Ever Tell You?
By Shane and All.
By Shane and All. And just think, this is your life.
And this song is your essence singing it to you.
Bye.
Bye.